Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your... Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world. From the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines. You'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. You're listening to us live on Building Fortunes Radio. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. This is our really special Citizens for Health segment. I met Jim Turner several years ago. Actually, it's been a lot of years ago. And when we started speaking together and I found out a little bit about citizens.org, and he helped some people that we know, I said, Jim, I really would love for you to be able to do a regular segment here to be able to help our Building Fortunes radio listening audience. Part of the reasons are, number one, he's a great attorney. Number two, really super knowledgeable. Jim Turner's been doing this for about a million years, at least it seems. He was one of the original Ralph Nader Raiders, wrote a book, became a bestseller, was always on the cutting edge, edginess, if you will, of being able to help consumers. And we just love his philosophies, as balanced as he is. And as we've seen him grow the Citizens for Health into the transpartisan voice and all those other things that he's been doing, we really just so certainly enjoy Jim Turner being here on Building Fortunes Radio. So the first thing I want you to do, if you're listening in and you can, make a note to sign up for the newsletter. Go to citizens.org, citizens.org. And when you go there, sign up for the newsletter. When you sign up for the newsletter, you'll get some of the greatest information you've ever found, some of it even customized towards perhaps the state that you might be in. And I'll share with you, you'll be picking up and learning some things that most people don't know about. So I've been alerted, if you will, of stuff that's happening in my own state that I had no idea. So we love it when Jim Turner happens to be in town and available for our live radio shows. So, Jim, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Peter, and thanks for the great introduction. What should we talk about today?
Well, I guess we always have people brand new listening in, so tell them a little bit about Jim Turner and Citizens, and you can spend just a few moments on that. And by the way, for those people that want to know more, when you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens, you can go all the way to the front of the rows and listen to any one of the beginning radio shows where Jim really tells you about Citizens and just realize it's grown from them. But give him like the 2-minute commercial on Citizens and Jim Turner.
Yeah, when Citizens for Health came into being in 1993 and was instrumental in getting the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act passed in Congress. It was the consumer part of a huge campaign to deliver over 1.5 million letters to Congress. This is before the internet. Letters to Congress, the largest number of letters Congress has gotten on any issue, Vietnam War, Obamacare, any issue, 1.5 million or more letters, and that legislation passed with virtually unanimous support in both the House and the Senate, and it is kind of the Bill of Rights of the dietary supplement world, and making dietary supplements available for consumers. Citizens went on from there and was involved in keeping organic when the Department of Agriculture tried to gut the organic definition in about 2000. 2010, we joined together to stop FDA from getting several dietary supplements listed as controlled substances by the DEA, generated about 25,000 letters to the two senators that introduced that bill, McCain and Dorgan, and ended up with them pulling the bill after 20 days or so of having it on the docket. So that's what we do, and our goal is to make sure that consumers have access to everything that they want to have access to in the health world, and that includes dietary supplements, natural organic foods, safe foods, that is the food additives restrained that are dangerous, or at least information about them made known. And that's basically our clean food and water project. All access to all complementary, alternative, and integrative medicine. So that's what we do, and we've got a nice following, and we put stuff out every week, two or three times a week, on issues. You can, as Peter says, go to the website and see what's going on there.
Excellent. And I know you've expanded to even Citizens for Health Choice. So that's a great thing, and maybe we'll talk about that some other time. Several months ago, we had a mom on the radio show talking about homeopathy. And I think you wanted to expand further on that. So I'll turn it over to you to, set it up and start talking about some of the stuff.
We have the FDA. The FDA is out, doing the kind of disruption of the consumer's rights that it likes to do. So it's now got a guidance on homeopathy that if it does go into effect, will make it much more difficult for consumers to get homeopathic remedies. It has some working on some thoughts to restrict pharmacies that are perform their compounding pharmacies that provide things like natural hormones and so forth. Want to restrict that? They basically want to bring everything under the control of the marketplace that sells drugs. I mean, that's basically what they want to do, and they fail to kind of understand that. It's very important to restrict things that are inherently dangerous, like dietary supplements that have dangerous components to it. We would agree should be restricted, and all drugs that are pharmaceutical products, because those pharmaceutical products are inherently dangerous. I mean, that's why this whole agency was set up. But now, what it wants to do is take all dietary supplements, which are foods, restrict them as if they were drugs. All homeopathic remedies, restrict them as if they were pharmaceuticals, and we are engaged with the FDA on these fronts. Specifically, there's a pending guidance, which many people have written comments in saying is not a good guidance, and the homeopathic community is now involved in coming back to the FDA with some very specific proposals on how to keep homeopathic choice available. The Homeopathic Choice Consumer Group met with the agency twice, looking forward to having another meeting with them to try to make it clear that there's a very, very strong difference between inherently dangerous pharmaceutical products, and inherently safe homeopathic products. And so this is quite a fascinating battle, and I would hope that your folks would stay tuned to our website and also to this program as we work to have that unfold. More and more, consumer choice is getting to be a key aspect of the battle over health care. We ground our arguments at Citizens for Health in the Kennedy Consumer Bill of Rights that was sent to Congress in 1992 by the president. And it called for four rights for consumers: the right to information, the right to choice, the right to safety, and the right to be heard. And we work hard to make all those things exist. And the backbone of our healthcare system, and pretty much any other system in the economic framework, is choice, the ability to choose among a wide variety of products. And that includes a wide variety of approaches. I mean, homeopathy is a very different approach than a pharmacological approach. And for the pharmacology approach folks to say homeopathy should be treated as if it were a dangerous drug is just silly. And we're going to sort our way through that, and hopefully the FDA will see the light and do the right thing. And if they don't, we'll go to court, and hopefully the courts will see it. And if not, we'll go to Congress. But it's a fight across the board to keep the homeopathic choice available to consumers. And consumers themselves should check it out. You might want to find a homeopath in your area, or read about homeopathy and recognize Whole Foods has a homeopathic section. You might be surprised to find that if you use some homeopathic remedies prior to going to the more hard stuff, You might not have to go to the hard stuff, at least not as frequently and routinely as we do. So that's a very big issue, Peter, and it's I think we should visit it back, you know, on and off as we go through things over the next months and years on this program.
Absolutely. So for those people that are want to hear a little bit more of the background of the fight behind this, what was the gal's name? It was Paula, but I remember, I think it was
Paula
Brown.
Yep. Paula Brown and her group is Homeopathy Choice.
Yep, and her last name is not spelled like P-A-U-L-A. It's like a Spanish, if you will, Paula. So I think it's
Portuguese.
P-A-O.
It's P.
Yeah, Portuguese. Okay, there we go.
It's her first name, P-A-O-L-A.
Yep.
Paula.
And you can
Paula
yep,
Brown.
Yeah, and you can find the radio show that we did with her on Building Fortunes Radio if you search by her name specifically. So you'll be able to find that. And she's just a really interesting person. I remember I was first introduced to homeopathy when I was working a network marketing company called Nutrition for Life, and they're no longer around anymore. And it was really probably one of the safest things I think that somebody could take. And I know that's a dangerous word to use, you know, safe. But the reality was is that it really had no side effects to speak of relative to the side effects of some drugs and stuff like that. And Paula mentioned as a mom, there's a lot of moms that are using homeopathy as like their first aid kit inside their home for stuff like, you know, everything, allergies, colds, stuff. And the idea that the FDA is trying to regulate them out of existence is just really, really, really sad. So, thanks for keeping us up to date on that issue.
Yeah, the FDA, just to be clear, the FDA will say they are not trying to regulate them out of existence. All they're doing is they're saying, this is the FDA's position. All they're doing is saying they should be subjected to the same kind of testing that the pharmaceuticals are subjected to. Now, a pharmaceutical product, one active ingredient in a pharmaceutical product, according to testimony by an expert from the government at a trial that I was involved in, testified that one active ingredient would cost about $100 million to test. Maybe they'll come back and say, no, it's only $50 million, or maybe it's only $10 million. But the idea that you're going to subject homeopathy to the they call it risk-based standard, the fact is that homeopathic remedies pose no risk as remedies. Whatever risk, if any, that exists in the homeopathic world is at the practitioner level, and it is not in any way tied to the products themselves. And in fact, at the practitioner level, there's no actual serious harm that you could get from everything we can tell. And there are hundreds and hundreds of research projects on this. In 200 years, homeopathy was first described in 1797, so it's all over 200 years. There has not been a single verified death or significant disability from using a homeopathic remedy. It's a completely different way of seeing reality. It is the idea that each individual has an innate capacity to heal themselves. Part of that's the immune system. And there are other systems that the body uses to heal itself if it comes into problems. And the homeopathic physician sits down with a person and talks to them about whatever symptoms or indicators they have, and then they find, using the homeopathic pharmacopoeia and related material, a substance that's been made homeopathically that the person can use, and that substance stimulates the ability of the body to heal itself. It's a totally empirical, practical, one of its side benefits is inexpensive, profoundly safe way of approaching an issue of health. The FDA says we're going to move them all over to the so-called risk-based area, but don't worry, we don't have enough resources at the FDA to look at all the several thousand homeopathic remedies, so there, most of them will still continue to be available. Some of them won't. But interestingly enough, all of them will be illegal. But the FDA will issue a statement saying we don't have enough resources to enforce the law, so most of you can be comfortable that the remedies will, in fact, be there. Now, my major concern is that the idea that the agency would say everything is bad, you can come along and show us the things that are good, is backwards. From a regulatory point of view, they should say, we're going to, these are for inherently safe items like homeopathy. They should say, these things are inherently safe. We don't see any problems that are generic in them. However, we will keep a very sharp eye and we will watch carefully and look for stuff. You know, complain if you got a problem, come to us, let us know, and we will find anything in there that is a bad thing. Now, they cite some examples. They say there were some teething substances that were used for children that caused problems. Those teething substances were, when you look at them very carefully, there's just not any kind of solid evidence that would show that they caused a problem. And we're delighted to have the discussion with the FDA about that and look at it and see what the situation was. There are products out there that they pointed at which are combined homeopathic with non-homeopathic products. And they're saying, well, those pose a problem. Well, we're saying they're not actually homeopathic products if they have a non-homeopathic active ingredient in them. The issue that we're dealing with here is how the FDA regulates. The amount of problem that something like homeopathy poses to the society generically and to individuals specifically is minute. The idea that they're spending any energy on this is just mind-boggling. They've had a system in place for 30 years that has been perfectly acceptable, proposed by the FDA, passed by the FDA, utilized by the FDA, them going around managing the whole homeopathic world. Everybody's been happy for 30 years. And all of a sudden, they decide to change it and change it in ways that even by their own terms are inexplicable. They say there's a problem. That problem is addressed by the petition, by the material that's already in place, the guidance that's already in place. They repeal the guidance that already addresses the problem that's there, and they don't put anything in to replace it. So they now have created a series of problems. It's a mind-boggling, but it is one of the wages of regulation. I started writing about this. We did an investigation in 1968-69 with 25 medical and law students working for Ralph Nader, and we ended up generating the book, The Chemical Feast, the Nader Report on food safety at the FDA, food protection at the FDA, and it was the structure of regulation was such that any correlation between health and regulation was not quite purely coincidental, but very close, very close. Foods that kill people on the, clinically, companies don't want to sell. The things that kill people over time, you know, like carcinogens and so forth, they don't want to be regulated. They want to be able to sell. The FDA is very, very good at getting rid of stuff that is clean, is something that they don't want to sell. The FDA can jump up there and say, we did this, we did that, we got rid of botulism or whatever. They are terrible in getting rid of things that cause chronic diseases like cancer. They're just out there, and it'll be years as we dig our way through. For example, let's just say one simple example, NutraSweet. We kept NutraSweet off the market for 11 years by forcing the FDA to systematically go through their regulatory process to examine the data. We got them to impanel a public board of inquiry, three world-class sciences from outside of the FDA. They looked at the NutraSweet data, and they said this should not be marketed. And for all intents and purposes, that should have been the end of NutraSweet. However, that happened in November of 1980. The presidential election was in October. In November was the election. Reagan was elected. He put Donald Rumsfeld on his transition committee. Donald Rumsfeld was president of the company that owned NutraSweet and was trying to get the FDA to approve it. When Reagan was sworn in, he blocked the commissioner of FDA from taking any further regulatory action, such as affirming the fact that NutraSweet would be banned. Or would not be approved, really. It wasn't banned. It would just not be approved because it didn't meet the right data. Then they appointed a new commissioner who was a former doctor on contract to the Defense Department when Rumsfeld worked there as secretary. that particular commissioner overturned the Public Board of Inquiry, and voila, we got NutraSweet on the market. Now, what's interesting is that the issue that the board was concerned about was a very specific brain tumor in animals called glioblastoma. There was an unexplained dynamic that showed glioblastoma existing in animal brains to an extent that they should not have existed. They said, because of that, we don't know how to explain it. We think it should not be marketed. The Food and Drug Law says no substance that causes causes any cancer in an animal or a human should be allowed to be a food additive. And they said, we can't let it be a food additive. Commissioner of FDA overturned it, and here we are. Teddy Kennedy died of a glioblastoma. He was known to drink diet sodas. Here we have McCain. We don't know what his diet soda habits are, but I would suspect he probably drinks a lot of diet sodas. If he doesn't drink diet sodas, there are 5,000 products that have NutraSweet in it, and it's a high likelihood by empirical, practical observation that consuming NutraSweet contributed to both the glioblastoma in Kennedy and in McCain, and tens of thousands of other people over the last 30 years. And, you know, the FDA is blithe. It doesn't concern itself. As far as the FDA is concerned, there's no problem. And they've manipulated the rules from 1981 to the present to keep NutraSweet a viable alternative in the marketplace. Our concern primarily was we never sought to ban it. What we sought was get the data to support its safety and make sure the public fully understands the debate. There is a huge debate about the safety of NutraSweet. You can find it by going online now, and more people are finding it. But you sit here in my office, and I get a call. I got one yesterday. I get them, you know, three or four times a week. Got a call yesterday from a woman who said she'd been referred to me. She was blind. She had a little bit of sight, but she was basically legally blind. And she said that for years she drank four or five liters of NutraSweet. NutraSweet sweetened material and gradually lost her eyesight. And she told her doctor, you know, they didn't know about the NutraSweet connection. And she said, look, you know, he said, well, you know, you're having some kind of problem, you should try this, you should try that, and never focused on NutraSweet. It wasn't until recently that she started hearing the information, and my God, she said, this is terrible. And by the way, almost everybody who calls me with the idea that they want to get the public to know. Almost nobody calls because they want to get money from a lawsuit or something of that kind. They're all very, very, they're trying really hard to let the public know that this is going on. Now, I think the FDA has been completely recalcitrant in what it's been doing here. And now, in the meantime, they go after homeopathy. I mean, this is like Alice in Wonderland. One judge said the FDA has an Alice in Wonderland regulatory process. A federal judge, senior federal judge here in Washington, said that. No one can seem to get it under control. It just keeps running and running all on its own. So that's one of those things.
Now, with the artificial sweeteners, there's a couple of different spin-offs from NutraSweet. Are they all more or less the same types of issues? You know, there's the pink stuff, the yellow stuff, the whatever other kind of colored envelope.
Pretty much all the stuff that's in the little sugar bowl that's on your table there should be looked at with suspicion. Sucralose has got serious problems. We've objected to sucralose. Equal is aspartame. It's got serious problems. Saccharin's got serious problems. We have never sought to ban any alternative sweetener. What we've sought is information. So we had this big fight over saccharin. FDA tried to ban it. I don't think they have the authority to ban it. We had this big fight over saccharin, and it was funny because the Congress came up with the idea of putting a warning on saccharin. So they put a warning on saccharin, and it said the Surgeon General has determined that saccharin has caused cancer in animals. And it was put on the package, you know, their pink packages. So they put the warning on in pink. I mean, you could not read it. And I had so much fun during those years. It was 1975 to 2000. And I had so much fun in those years sitting down with people. They'd pick up their Sagarin and say, see that pink thing there? Take a look and read it. And they'd read it, and it would say, the Surgeon General of the United States has determined that saccharin causes cancer in animals. Whoa, I didn't know that. Holy cow. I don't think anybody ever saw that. Probably somebody did, but 99% of the people did not see that warning because it was pink on a pink package. By the way, what happened to that warning is that in his orgy of pardoning, when President Clinton was going out of office, he essentially pardoned saccharin. He signed a piece of legislation that got that warning removed right at the last days. You know, the lobbyists are wonderful people. You know, they just go through there and dump things in, and they see the president's going nuts, only got another 24 hours in office, so let's get something on his desk right away because he'll sign it. Particularly if you give enough money to whoever it is that was behind all of this, you know, whoever. And he did. So we don't have that warning anymore. There are some packages, and there are some places you see a green package. The green package, to some extent, might be okay. It depends on what kind of stevia it is. There's stevia that is made without a lot of heavy processing is a good product. My basic argument, Citizens for Health has done some campaigning jointly with sugar on trying to get things that aren't sugar to stop calling themselves sugar, like fructose. And my basic argument I've come up with is the best sweetener is sugar in moderation. They're trying to hold sugar away. This whole idea of sugar is bad is basically designed to cover over the notion of high fructose corn syrup. So, you know, they're going after sodas, because sugar is bad. But what's interesting is 95% of the non-artificially sweetened sodas are sweetened with fructose, not with sugar, with fructose. And so they got the public out there running around being afraid of sugar. The per capita income intake of sugar from 2009 from 1909 to 2009 remained constant. This is an issue we hadn't been planning to get onto, I didn't think, Peter, but
right.
It's so interesting to see the way the FDA, you know, goes after homeopathy and then lets artificial sweeteners out there causing huge damage. It's you know, it's just a fascinating process.
It is. It's startling and amazing and perplexing, and there's no rational reason except for it's got to have something to do with money. So it's got to have something to do with money because that's the way these things work. It feels like, in my opinion. So I'm guessing
pretty much everything
that,
in this culture has to do with money.
Yeah, I know. But the thing that's somewhat perplexing, and I know this is a tough question to answer, because different people have different brains or personalities. But if I were running a company and somebody brought compelling evidence to me that the product that I was selling could potentially harm or kill people, I would have a real hard time with continuing to do that product. Or I'd certainly do a lot more research. And if I found that product was harmful for people, I would probably shut it down.
It's a funny business I'm in because I gave a talk on NutraSweet once 10-15 years ago, and a woman in the audience got me aside afterwards. She said, you know, I'm a friend of a woman who has a very close relationship with the president of Monsanto, and she told me that he said he learned that it was not very safe and she should probably not use it. I thought that was pretty interesting. I suppose it's probably just a conspiracy theory, but it's really something. I have no idea. You know, this Monsanto crowd is a really fascinating crowd. We had a sweetener, a nice sweetener that was coming along, which was made from stevia. It's very interesting, and wanted to get it on the market. And through chicanery, Monsanto got hold of trying to control it. And we managed to file a lawsuit and stop them from getting control of it. But that set up some negotiations with them around the lawsuit and other things. And we sat down across the table from the guy that was in charge of producing sweeteners, producing NutraSweet for Monsanto. And he was very interested in including this stevia product as part of their tabletop sweeteners and commercial sweeteners. And so he went back to the company. He was fired. Another guy came. Same conversation. We laid out all the data. He said, oh, that's pretty interesting. Went back. He was fired. The next guy comes, the third one comes, and he sits down, and he says, we can't do that because we've got all these fermenters around, and our product is made with fermentation. Your product is made with water extraction, and it's going to cost too much to switch all of that stuff around, so we're just going to stick with what we've got, and that's just the way it is. Too bad. I mean, that is a decision that has nothing to do with the well-being of the public. It's just a very, very fascinating situation. Oh, and by the way, it's very important to know now that Monsanto is going to disappear and become Bayer. Bayer has purchased Monsanto. They'll probably come up with an alternative name, but it's very important to know that Bayer equals Monsanto. They are going to try to get all of the Monsanto benefits without any of the Monsanto odium. But Bayer is going to take on a real it's taking on a real load of stuff, and anybody out there who's already alert to the Monsanto problem, and it's huge. I mean, they've got not only NutraSweet but GMOs, they've got rug chemicals that harm children, but pretty much everything that Monsanto makes has got a problem, and they are now going to be absorbed into Bayer. The idea being that Bayer's name on it will clean it up somewhat. But don't forget, it's still Bayer is now essentially Monsanto, or will be shortly. So, anyway, that's where we are in this marvelous world that we live in.
Yep. It's a wonderful example of marketing and branding, because most people, when you say Bayer, they think Bayer aspirin. So, how much safer can it be? So we get it, but the general population is kind of busy with their head buried in their phone.
Well, the problem with the general population is that we've structured a society in which they don't have any time or resources to look into these things. I mean, when you're working a 40, 50, 60-hour a week, you don't have time to sit around and think about this stuff. You assume that, maybe the corporations will produce them in an honest and responsible way. That's not going to happen. Maybe the government will regulate them. It's not going to happen. Maybe things will happen that your friends will tell you. Well, the friends are also busy, too. If you listen carefully to your friends, you'll learn a lot of this stuff. Actually, NutraSweet's not been a very successful product compared to what they expected. They thought they were going to have a $7 billion a year product. They ended up with something like a $1.5 billion, $2 billion a year product. And I consider that to be a marginal victory from our side. But these guys that run these companies and run the government are disconnected. They're in their heads. They're the best and the brightest. They bring you things like Vietnam and poison food additives and so on. It's an epistemological problem of our culture that's got to be sorted out. And, we're in the midst of sorting it out now because we're seeing things that used to be hidden we now see in public.
Yes, and then why don't you just touch base real quick, because we're already in bonus time and I want to respect the idea that you're spending some of your time here. Talk to us about the transpartisan voice.
Well, transpartisan voice and transpartisan review are making the argument that the left-right debate is not really very persuasive. Left and right, but together they do good and bad things. So we create a matrix which is called it's the transpartisan matrix, and we have a left-right horizontal axis and an order-freedom vertical axis. And if you look at the battles that are going on in actuality, the real battles in the culture, it's the left and right order people versus the left and right free people. Freedom and order on both the left and right. And the big issue is, rather than fighting, we should be figuring out how to integrate the freedom and order principles from both the left and the right. And what happens is you'll find that there's hardly any support for putting poison sweeteners into the soda. There's hardly any support for that. The only way that gets done is by people with a huge amount of money and lots of resources going around and manipulating the Congress, the courts, the regulators, and so on. But in terms of the actual nature of the society that we live in, the vast majority of people, 70% or so, opt out of the political system. That's the people that don't register at all, the people who register as independents, and the people who don't vote. Those three groups together are something in the neighborhood of 60 to 70% of the population. And they are not identifying themselves with either the Democrats or the Republicans or the right or the left. and how they get engaged is the key to moving us forward. And what we have going on now is desperate battling on the part of the people with money and power to keep that 70% on the sidelines. That's what you see with the Trump administration. Basically, all these crony capitalists that have gotten in control of the various departments are mainly trying to divert the public away from any kinds of issues that the public would be would have a different position than they do. The tragedy of the situation is that they're able to get into those positions. That is, the crony capitalists are able to get into those positions because the people who were in them before mishandled those positions as well, and they did all kinds of overreach and destruction and so on. I mean, you know, the people who like regulation were in power for many years, and that, by the way, was both for Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, and liberals. Now you've got a bunch of people who hate regulation, and they're trying to gut everything, and unfortunately they're gutting not only the things that should be gutted, but they're gutting a lot of other stuff as well. And we're saying, from the transpartisan point of view, that the population itself needs to start thinking about ways to get this all under control, and that actually if you look at the local and state government level, you'll find a lot more stuff going on that is not this vicious, nasty, partisan kind of craziness that goes on here in Washington. We write a note out every week, and we put out a little journal every so often, and we really point at a lot of stuff going on in the culture.
Excellent. Okay, well, I want to respect your time for being here. Thanks, Jim Turner. So those people listening in, make sure you sign up for the citizens.org newsletter. And as you heard on this radio show, you can hear the history of a lot of stuff as you go through. So even though it might be an older radio show, it's certainly worth listening to because Jim always gives us really great information on a whole bunch of different things. So citizens.org. That'll be the first place you go to sign up for the newsletter. Jim, thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot, Peter. I really appreciate it. Hopefully we'll see you again next week.
Yep, next week if you're in town. Thanks. Bye, everyone.
Thanks. Bye.
You've been listening to the Citizens for Health radio show, brought to you by Citizens for Health on buildingfortunesradio.com with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Thanks for listening. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. Go to www.citizens.org to learn more and always listen in to Building Fortunes Radio, where our special host, Jim Turner, shares crucial information about many of the most important issues that affect your world. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. So listen in, get involved, and help spread the word. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear more Citizens for Health segments with Jim Turner and Peter Mingle, and read about what's new on www.citizens.org. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Jim Turner, Peter, and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to go spread the word, tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.